1 this morning at the LCDC, 6-1, in which two asphalt batch plants were in effect placed back on a conditional use basis, could be turned back if that amendment proceeds. The problem that we have as it pertains to our grape plants, first of all, let me say that we're farmers, we're not scientists, but on the other hand, during the past 2 years, it was placed upon our shoulders to come up with as much information as possible to determine what effect asphalt batch plants would have on our operation. We hired expert witnesses at our own expense, I might add, not the county's expense, including a Dr. Earl Mart, who's a professor of atmospheric sciences at Oregon State University, Dr. Earl Bates, an agricultural weatherman, now retired and operating Northwest Weather Associates. They gave us information which pointed to the fact that we would have a problem regarding particulates that are being emitted into certain air sheds that surround our vineyards as it pertains to the ripening of our grapes. We also have information from France that deals with the odors that are picked up by the grapes and then transmitted to the wines. We have information from California, and some of this will be addressed by other members who are with me. So I just wanted to point out that as it pertains to my other crops, we have no problem. The grape plant is basically the bee of the insect field. It's a maverick. It's highly susceptible. There hasn't been a lot of research done in this area. However, we have enough information available that we feel, and the winemakers feel, that there would be a serious threat to the Oregon wine industry if asphalt batch plants were carried on close to vineyards. So, just wait this time.
Thanks, sir. Who would be next?
Okay. My name is David Lett. I'm the owner and operator of the Irie Vineyards in Dundee. I'm going to read you a brief statement because I forget when I do it as Jim does. 16 years ago, my wife and I established the first wine grape vineyard in the Willamette Valley. We chose the Willamette Valley specifically after looking at a number of different regions throughout the world. The reason being that we have some very precise conditions in the Willamette Valley for growing certain grape varieties. Wine growing since then has become an important industry in the state, as I'm sure most of you are aware. The industry has created new jobs, promoted rapidly and ever-increasing tourism. It brought a great deal of revenue to the state. It's an agricultural industry and it's completely non-polluting. The wines from this area have been recognized all over the world for their quality, and the wineries receive thousands of visitors from many states and countries every year. Tourists come to visit the vineyards and wineries just because the wines are beautiful, but also because they expect the land to be beautiful also. They do not bring friends and relatives to enjoy the sight of a belching asphalt plant or a highly industrial rock quarry. In effect, the heavy industrial use in grape-growing areas will seriously and permanently affect the growing wine and tourist industries here in the state of Oregon. This will affect not just the grape growers, but the entire economy of the state. I would point out that the second largest tourist attraction in California after Disneyland is the Napa Valley, and there aren't many mineral aggregate plants and asphalt plants permitted in the Napa Valley. Between wine growing and aggregate asphalt production, then, I think dollar for dollar, job for job, and tourist for tourist, the wine industry is far the more valuable resource to the state. That's all I have to say.
Other questions? Thank you, Dave.
For the record, my name is Arthur Weber, and I'm co-owner of Weber Vineyards in Dundee, Oregon. I planted my first vineyards in 1975, and presently have 23 acres in wine grapes. My vineyards presently sell their wines to the Knutson Erath Winery, also in Dundee. It's a neighboring winery. And Dick Erath, the winemaker at Knutson Erath, was one of the pioneers with David Lett in developing the present Oregon wine growing industry. Mr. Erath would like me to read a letter from him regarding this subject and to submit it into testimony. Fellow Oregonians, wine grapes are grown in two narrow bands that encircle the earth, each of which lie about halfway between the equator and the poles. The landmass involved is very small. And in this area, there is even the smaller part which produces great wines of the world. While still young as an industry, Oregon wines belong to this distinctive class. The reason for this is that more than any other plant, the grape reflects its total environment. It is truly the sponge of plant life. Growing on the bottom of a sea of air, the grape takes in compounds that are in that air. Recently, Dr. Walter Eigenberger, the director of Wine Grape Research School at Badenswil, Switzerland, related a case where poles treated with creosote, an oil-based product, were installed in a vineyard and the ensuing wine tasted and smelled like creosote and had to be destroyed. Also, in Riverside, California, wine grape quality was severely affected because of auto air pollution, even though the cars were equipped with proper pollution devices. Therefore, batch plants that have emissions to the air should not be allowed in the vineyard area. Thank you for your consideration in this matter. Sincerely yours, Richard Erath. I have some facts that I'd like to present regarding the wine growing industry in Oregon. 21 years ago, the first modern vineyard was planted in Roseburg. 15 years ago, there were but four vineyards in the state of Oregon. Today, there are over 40 wineries, making Oregon the third largest state in the 50 states in terms of wineries, and an estimated 100 vineyards. They are a source of income for the county, they're a source of income for the state, and the Oregon Wine Growers Association has also voluntarily taxed themselves to fund agricultural research at Oregon State University. Bill Blosser of Soco Blosser Vineyards, Dick Erath of Erath Knutson or Knutson Erath Vineyards, my wife and I are all members of the Greater Portland Conventions and Visitors Bureau. Not only with does the grape growing industry bring in tourism, but we're also working with the Bureau to encourage out-of-state meetings and conventions in Portland by encouraging and advertising the benefits of day tours from Portland to the Oregon wine country, which is only approximately 30 minutes away. All of these are assets that I believe could be jeopardized if we allow batch plants within immediate proximity of Oregon wineries and vineyards.
Other questions?
Senator Day.
If I like your product so well, I really don't want to have a creosote glass of wine. So,
yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, in all fairness, if the vineyard is planted after the batch plant. You succeed in, or agree that the batch plant there first. Is there some right given, or do you think that they have some right to exist together? Or are you suggesting that we outlaw batch plants next to wherever a vineyard might come in, even if they've been there first, the batch plant? How do you feel about that?
Well, to answer your question, the way I feel, I think I'd be a fool to plant a vineyard next to an existing batch plant. And I wouldn't expect the existing batch plant manager...
But if the batch plant comes to you after the fact, you want protection. Is that the point? Okay. That's what I want to know.
Mr. Hamby.
And then what is reasonable? Noting that, in fact, the your analogy of a vineyard or a grape plant being the bee of the insect world, if I recall one of you saying. What is a reasonable distance, considering winds, etc.?
Maybe I can address that. We thought about that.
and we feel that, of course, much of it depends upon the airshed, but we felt that if we had about a 2-mile protection from a batch plant, that that would be a reasonable distance.
Downwind? I mean...
Well, of course, the wind is...
I mean, upwind, rather. I mean...
basically, what? The wind is changeable, so...
So regardless.
Yes, regardless.
Are you satisfied that that the only thing you're concerned about is air pollution in that sense? Are there other impacts that you think of that batch plants and or other types of aggregate mining provide in terms of hazards or negative impacts on your area? So I guess I'd like to talk about air pollution in addition. What are the other problems associated, and then we do need to get...
Perhaps I could answer that. I did have some comments I want to make, too.
Yes, identify yourself for the record.
My name is Rodney Stevens, and I have a filbert orchard in the same area. Would you like me to make my comments first or to answer your question first?
Why don't you go ahead and answer the question before I forget it?
I think that in our conflicts with Yamhill County, we've discussed over a period of about 2 years a whole host of issues, including noise, possible water pollution, the threat to tourism there, transportation problems, others. As a matter of fact, while I endorse everything these individuals have said, I go a good deal further in my own feelings, in that I regard the hot batching and concrete manufacture and certain other of these processes, even rock crushing in certain areas, as certainly akin to a very heavy polluting industrial operation, which doesn't belong in all cases in an agricultural or any other kind of zone. I don't think it many of these uses should be permitted uses. We were also greatly concerned with reclamation of these areas, so that we don't have visual blight throughout a valley that presently, as we've said, is virtually the only tourist attraction in Yamhill County.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead then?
All right. My personal comments, I'll save until I read a letter which I have been asked to read by Mr. Fred Arterbury. Not being able to attend today's hearing, and this is his letter, I wish this letter read into the record. My name is Fred Arterbury, Jr., and I am the winemaker and general manager at the Arterbury Winery. Having testified numerous times in total opposition to land use policies which would allow asphalt hot batching adjacent to agricultural lands, I was astonished to learn of a bill allowing this manufacturing process to be conducted in exclusive farm use zones. Of what purpose is land use planning unless to evaluate conflicting uses and set a sage course for the future? By arbitrarily allowing asphalt hot batching in AFU zones, I see a tremendous circumvention of the rights of surrounding landholders to farm their land as they desire and to prosper from it. The conflicts arising from the bill will only take us a giant step backward in intelligent land use planning laws Oregonians have strived for. At Arterbury Limited, my entire grape harvest is purchased from a vineyard adjacent to the potential asphalt manufacturing site in Yamhill County. From these grapes, we have pioneered Oregon's entrance into the sparkling wine market. I and other winemakers draw from the vineyards. What happens to the wine quality when your neighbor is allowed to spew a high density of petroleum particulates on the grapes? The stage is set for financial disaster for the grower and the winery. When a grape cluster is covered with a film of asphalt emissions, the resulting wine is tainted with this undesirable attribute, oil and tar. In addition, attached to the particulates are polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are very carcinogenic. This is verified by the EPA, which has a long list of these compounds generated from asphalt hot batching plants. Knowing this, my next thought was to find out what other grape growing areas are doing about the problem. I contacted Dr. Robert Brewer at the Kearney Horticultural Station in Pardee, California. Dr. Brewer is an expert in air pollution as it affects grapes and wine. He said under no circumstance was an asphalt hot batching plant allowed near grapes. unless that plant is put under conditional use and the condition of the permit being that no damage to grapes occurs. Damage to the grapes includes a reduction in photosynthetic ability, hence reduced crop and sugar levels, as well as a decline in wine quality. The French don't allow either hot batching or road paving near vineyards in peak ripening months from June to November. I draw heavily upon both California and France for their knowledge through past viticultural experience and certainly believe they know what they're talking about. Another complication involving emissions in crops is the fact that all sites of hot batching are not the same. Topographical considerations dictate the emissions plume penetration to the other upper atmosphere or its stagnation under inversion circumstances. Our study by Northwest Weather Associates substantiated fears that due to heavy atmospheric inversion, the vineyard I draw grapes from would be particularly susceptible to air pollution during peak ripening months. The low plume temperature from an adjacent hot batch plant will not penetrate upward and will engulf the vines in a cloud of emissions. Bill 234 doesn't take sites into consideration. I respectfully suggest that 234 be defeated. My own comment about the hot batching specifically is that it isn't necessary with the portability of this kind of unit to make it a permitted use on an aggregate site. I had reason to question a manufacturing firm in California on this, which does a great deal of work in Hawaii. There, they recognize that this is an industrial operation. It isn't a permitted use. The portable hot batch plant can either be placed on a construction site, if that's otherwise allowable, in an industrial zone, but it is not placed on the quarry unless that quarry itself has been given that distinction. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any concerns about road dust and that sort of thing? Just in terms of the whole aggregate production issue, is that a problem, or are we just really
road
talking?
Dust?
Yeah, are we just really talking about the hot batching and the asphalt, or are there other aspects of it that you're concerned about of the whole aggregate production area?
If you generate dust. Most of the roads that I'm familiar with in Yamhill County leading to pits are paved, but in other areas, if you generate dust and covers grapes, then you get mite infections. And if you generate a lot of dust at harvest time, obviously it's going to get into the wine.
So dust is a problem, can be a problem, depending on how it's regulated.
I would call it minor.
Okay, it's a minor problem.
Yeah. I think, personally, to answer your question to Rodney, I think that the aesthetic thing dealing, I mean, the problem with batch plants in essentially a tourist attraction area is a very major problem, considering the kind of money that this industry can generate for the state of Oregon and all the money that Oregon's putting into trying to attract tourists.
Senator Hanby.
I certainly recognize the need and sympathetic and supportive of controlling batch plants. A question, however, probably not relevant to the bill before us, but every weekend when I go home and note the accumulation of Mount St. Helens ash on my car, knowing also that I have vineyards in the area, what does Mount St. Helens ash do?
They analyzed it at OSU after the last eruption, and it's essentially silicates and therefore
so
neutral.
During ripening or harvesting, there's no problem.
Well, I'll tell you, in our vineyard, we had a blow in October. I've forgotten when it was.
Yeah.
And we took the sprayer out, took the nozzles off, and washed all the grapes off because I didn't know what was going to get into the wine.
And one month ago, again, a puff anyway, enough to come out toward Forest Grove and Hillsboro.
Really? I wasn't aware of that.
Okay, are there any other questions for the people who've come? Do you have anything else to share with us before you? Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll leave the letters, and also I do have a report from Northwest Weather Associates who did deal with that problem for us that I'd like to leave with.
Good. We appreciate that, and the staff will take it down and we'll pass it out to members and make sure that it's available. Thank you.
Oh, excuse me, there's one other point.
Could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, no. Jim Marsh again. again, dealing with the fact that asphalt plants as it pertains to vineyards, we would like to, we thought about this problem, and we want to be fair about it. And I'd say we recognize that in an EFU zone, there are other crops that are not affected. So I would like to introduce this language, Section 1, Section 2, as an amendment. This act is added to and made a part of ORS Chapter 215, Section 2. The governing body of a county shall not approve an asphalt batching plant within 2 miles of a commercial vineyard if the vineyard is located within an exclusive farm use zone established under ORS 215.203 to 215.273. For purposes of this section, a commercial vineyard is a vineyard that produces or is planted to grapes capable of producing at least $10,000 in annual gross income at harvest. I'm sorry about this, but as I said, we were so involved today with the LCDC level that we were only able to write this out without a formal document, but we would also like to introduce that into the record.
Do you have a copy of that you can leave
yes.
with us?
Yes.
Okay, well.
Thank you very much.
Put that in as an offered amendment on your behalf. Thank you very much. Whoops. Is somewhere in your testimony, could you leave? Yes, we do have your address here. In case we need further clarification. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
The writing letter is here. If you leave it, probably
here's my address.
Good. Thank you very much. Okay, we have now just for the two of us here. It's my understanding from the chairman as he left that. There's a possibility that someone from who came from out of town on 720s. Are they still here?
Looks like she left.
I think she's left.
Check the hall.
Check the hall. There's
people. Yeah, let's see if we want anybody to deal with 720. We obviously do not have, we don't have LB here either, just so fly out his amendments on 223, 226. Okay, is there anyone else who we don't have anybody else here at all? Then I think unless we don't really have anybody to deal with that.
We do have the House lawyer who can speak to the 226 amendment if you wanted.
We don't really have people in here.
Can they come back?
Hal Sawyer's here on 226. Where? LB, is Hal here? LB, do you want to hear from Hal Sawyer on the amendments to 226?
Yes, I do. And then Hal, would you come up here, please? I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. I just simply had to get out of here a few minutes.
Yeah, well, the rest of us, I think we're losing a committee call.
I'll stay right
quickly
here.
Anyway.
I just apologize.
But
okay.
Let's take up Senate Bill 226. And
I have some amendments here. Hal, do you have a copy of the, just a second here,
well,
226.
Yep, 226.
Yeah, dated June 30th from the Water Resources Caucus. Do you have a copy of those?
June 3rd.
June 3rd.
Yes.
All right. Are you satisfied with that approach, and will that cover your concerns?
Does that version have some pencil changes on
yes.
That?
Here's what it says. On page 1, line 27, the print of bill after the semicolon insert, minimum premium stream flows established to minimize pollution shall be related to maximum allowable pollutant loadings established to maintain Oregon's water quality standards adopted to pursuant to ORS 468735.
Okay. That's the version I'm looking at.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yes. You know, my name is Harold Sawyer. I have reviewed that and I've discussed it with Jack Smith, and while we don't believe that amendment is necessary, I think that language does, as near as I can tell, does not create any problems for us.
Good. Well, I'd kind of like to have it in there, if we don't mind.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Do you have any further comments on the other proposed amendments to Senate Bill 226, I would think? Probably not.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Now, for that, Madam Chairman, I think that, as soon as we get a quorum, that one is...
If we could get a quorum. But are there...
Senator Hannity's coming right back. She had to make one phone call, and she said she'd be right back. But this is ready to go. If we can move this, we could send this out, I'm pretty sure, isn't it, Todd?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, well...
Okay, in the meantime, we're going to wait for that, and then I would like to... I've got a note here from Lois Carnegie saying that she's can't get back because strawberry harvest and would like to testify on Senate Bill 234 a moment, and so I think I'd like to allow her that privilege while we're waiting for Jeanette, and if Jeanette could come back,
she's coming.
226 we could move, and we wouldn't look at 223.
Yeah. I think we need. Okay. But 223, I definitely is going to come out of this committee today, okay?
Okay.
Senator Cohen's starting this one today. Thank you very much for
what's a strawberry kick? Are you going to be picking strawberries?
Yes, we're going to be picking strawberries in about 5 days earlier than we had planned, and I'm not ready, and I shouldn't be here today. But,
okay.
But anyway.
I'm sure glad you were.
Thank you. Well, I wish there were seven senators sitting there. You may recall that when Agriculture for Oregon presented Senate Bill 237, it had a provision in about aggregate extraction. I think Hector McPherson hopefully will be able to get back with you when you have further hearings on that, but I wanted to talk about my own personal concerns and my husband's concerns. I wanted to give you some testimony that he had written out for an earlier hearing at a time when then you decided...
Can I stop you right now? Sure. Do you think this bill is anything or anything regarding this bill is necessary?
Regarding 234.
Anything regarding the issue...
Of aggregate extraction.
Yes.
Yes, we certainly do. I've talked considerable lengths to one of the attorneys who has handled an aggregate case for us being persons in Benton County, and who has handled aggregate cases in Polk County. And the attorney, whom I wish could come and testify, says that part of the problem and part of the reason there have been so many appeals in relationship to aggregate extraction in EFU's ends is because there is no criteria established for when farmland, farm production should have priority over aggregate extraction. Cliff's testimony, the testimony of my husband that he had drafted, gives a little background on that. Ag for Oregon and many of us who worked with that felt that some kind of criteria on when you can extract gravel from classes 1 and 2 soils is very important. Let me just read a little bit of Cliff's comments. In earlier years, primitive technology was not a threat to our best river bottom soils. Pioneers with pick and shovel selected only those areas where aggregate was near the surface, and hence there was no thick overburden of rich topsoil. Was destroyed. Modern technology, however, can be very destructive. The overburden of topsoil is no deterrent. Adjoining our farm, 15 feet of overburden was used recently for the approach to the new bridge on the Willamette River in Albany. This removal made aggregate available for short-term needs, but the Class 2 soil is lost forever. One of the cases that we've been very much concerned about in Benton County is the case where of a field where an aggregate company wished to extract. And that particular parcel of soil was responsible for 0.5% of the total table beet production in the United States. It's that kind of really fertile soils that we're concerned about. We're told river bottom soils provide high quality aggregate required for some specific types of construction, and we're willing to accept that. However, this same river bottom aggregate is being used for many, many other purposes. Currently, in Albany and Corvallis, it is being used for backfill on sewer lines. Now, those streets have just been paved over, but when Cliff wrote this, we were driving through Albany where good river bottom gravel was being used to fill in sewer lines. Material dug out for the Albany sewer lines is being dumped on river bottom land adjacent to the bridge approach that was earlier constructed of rich topsoil. The spill dirt is deposited free to the land speculator who will realize windfall profits from converting the floodplain land to non-floodplain commercial property. If the cities think they need rock for backfill, there is quarry rock available at the same cost, comparable distance, and of better quality for these purposes. The fill dirt excavated from the sewer lines could be stockpiled for future bridge approaches. At a Benton County hearing, aggregate industry officials stated that much aggregate was being used for non-required purposes. The industry also quoted Dagami in a Benton County hearing that at current usage rates, all aggregate deposits will be exhausted in 20 years. What will we do then for aggregate? And some of our best land will be gone. I'm reminded of a comment that Senator Roberts made before his illness when he said, I really don't know very much about planning, being very modest. But the one thing that I do know is that when we plan, our clients, our future generations, and because we can't consult with those clients who are yet unborn, then we need to protect their options. By allowing aggregate extraction on these best quality soils, we are closing the options for future generations. An alternative would be to limit aggregate extraction to riverbeds. Now here, the farmers and the aggregate industry agree. They disagree on many things, but we would like to see aggregate extraction from riverbeds. The industry loses interest in this, however, because of opposition from the powerful fish lobby and the Board of State Lands, who apparently charge more for aggregate than farmers do. We hear the complaint that hauling distance is a tremendous factor and we have to get it from the river bottom soils, but we believe that hauling distance isn't as big a factor as the industry would have.